Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:13 British Summer Time. Today is August 27th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it really has been a very eventful week indeed. The week started out with US Treasuries and sovereign bonds generally really surging on the upside, and sentiment was going there with them, with a large momentum move taking place, with sucking in lots of investors, and to my mind, a great deal of rationalization of the move was also going on. The stock market was under pressure for at least in the USA and in Europe. For a good part of the week, but we're seeing the action on Wall Street as we look at the close, that it's an upside key day reversal on both the Dow and the S&P, which indicates that they're finding support in the region of 50%, or having held 50% of their advance from the July lows. Elsewhere in the equity markets, the Japanese market was interesting today. It has been largely tied with the strength of the yen and has been deteriorating quite considerably over the last few weeks. But the second section index of smaller cap shares posted an upside key day reversal on Monday and another one in here today. And so did the topics. And the yen today was weaker. By almost a full yen against the US dollar, although strengthened a little bit into the close in here today. The yen is also notable because it hit 15-year highs in here this week and is pulling, well, appears to be pulling back from those levels as we enter the last part of the week. Oil also went down and had a look at the $70 level and has rebounded quite considerably over the last couple of days. It's up to $75 now, up $2 in here today. Gold has been grinding out a move up towards the 1240 level. Intra-week, it had pulled back rather sharply, but left a long tail on the candle, and has improved in here over the last couple of days as well. So it's pushing up there to the 1240 area. Silver had a very strong day yesterday and held that advance in here today, and it's back above $19 for the first time in a while. The palladium market was also stronger in here this week, and platinum found support in the region of the $1,500 level once more. In the soft commodities sector, coffee had a very big downward dynamic in here this week. That really probably does cap the advance in the short and potentially even the medium term. I think it's probably more a question now of just how much right-hand extension it gets before we see further unwinding of the really quite impressive advance it's had this year. Cocoa has also topped out over the last couple of months and has pulled back rather sharply. But elsewhere in the soft commodity sector, wheat continues to hold in the region of this $7 area. Corn pushed up out of the most recent little range in here today. It's at 436 cents, and that's pressuring the upper side of the base as well, or the highest levels that we've seen in the last 18 months. Soybeans is also really quite firm. It is holding in the region of this $10 level really quite impressively. Rough rice, having pushed up to the $12 level earlier this week, pulled back a little bit from that area today, but that one also has a progression of higher reaction lows in the over the last 6 weeks, which would need to be broken to offset potential for it to really go on and follow those other grains. So this really has been quite an eventful week on a number of fronts. The industrial metal markets were also of interest because we saw that some of the ones that have been harder hit, such as aluminium, pulled back and found support at the upper side of the little bases that have been put in at the early part of this year. Whereas some of the leaders, such as copper, rebounded really quite impressively over the latter half of this week, having tested the 200-day moving average and pushed on to retest the upper side of the short-term range by the end of the week. And tin, which has been leading on the upside, broke upwards to new recovery highs in here today. So As I said, a very interesting week indeed. What we tend to see, particularly when you have such a large momentum move as we've had in US Treasuries, is that the price action becomes really very impressive. And you have a certain amount of rationalization of how much the how good the situation is for that particular market. And that's been no less the case in US Treasuries this week. But there is no problem with supply in US Treasuries. We have governments and corporates all over the world rushing out to lock in cheap capital at a really quite an enormous rate. And that's not something that's about to change. So we have the US government and a number of governments in the Eurozone and indeed the UK all jostling for position to print a huge amount of debt over the coming years. And it's not just sovereign bonds, because there's a large number of corporates are there's some even issuing 100-year bonds in an effort to lock in these very low rates of or costs of capital. And that alone should have us looking for warning signals, because in a market where supply is expanding at an incredible rate and prices continue to go higher, well, it is only a matter of time before the available supply comes into balance with the available demand, and in which case then you're left with nothing but potential sellers who hold an awful lot of bonds. So the type of activity that we've seen over the last couple of weeks in particular, where people are getting increasingly bullish of bonds, is indicative more of the positions that people already have rather than what they're going to do with their money. Now, today, with Chairman Bernanke coming out and saying that they're willing to do whatever it takes to support the US economy, that has given pause to people who were pricing in the eventuality or the pricing in the potential for a double-dip recession in the USA and indeed globally. People were looking on that as a foregone conclusion. And today's talks by the Fed indicate that it's not a foregone conclusion. And if we do see that growth moderates even more, then the quantitative easing that the US has undertaken over the last couple of months will continue. And they have a number of other tools in their arsenal with which to stimulate the economy, and they will not be shy about using them if they feel the need. Of course, government buying has been a major source of demand for these for this huge supply of treasuries. So, to one extent, it is one arm of the government lending to the other, and using fiat currency as the medium of transaction. Certainly the quantitative easing element of what's been going on is certainly not lost on us, but the extent to which the bearish sentiment has gone does suggest that today's downward dynamic, with US Treasuries down almost 2 full points, is a high of at least short-term significance, potentially medium-term. Now, for that to be a medium-term top in here today, we would need additional follow-through. More importantly, if we did have additional follow-through on any subsequent rally, it would need to encounter resistance below today's high, so or this week's high at least. So the market has certainly paused. Whether this is a pullback and consolidation of previous gains before it goes on and retests the 2009 highs is very much an open question, but we've certainly seen a short-term high, potentially medium-term. There's still a great deal of economic problems that need to be worked through in the USA, not least unemployment and the housing market. But they're not insurmountable, and Fed stands by to do whatever is necessary to support the economic expansion. So, following such an enormous move, U.S. Treasuries are, at least in the short term, a risky long trade, and potentially the medium term. Over the long term, you're looking at a market which has been going up since 1980, and that's 30 years. And a 30-year bull market, by any definition, is pretty long in the tooth. And when one looks at history, the extent to which we see that supply increases at the upper side, or at the tops of major bull markets, it happens all too often to ignore. And considering the massive fiscal deficits that have been undertaken to get out of this economic mess that so many countries find themselves in, with the amount of supply that's coming out there, the likelihood of 30-year or 100-year bonds or perpetual bonds that are being issued by governments at today's levels being seen as good value into the future is really, I think, quite a low possibility. What we continue to see, because we have these remarkably low yields across the sovereign bond sector, is increased interest in higher yielding equities. In the corporate bond sector, because you've had this compression in yields as people have tried to lock in a yield and bought more of these bonds, people are starting to move out the risk curves. In other words, they're buying lower rated or less secured bonds in an effort to lock in the yield that they need for their for whatever requirements they have. Personally, I think that is a rather risky type of trade to partake in, because it's assuming that the current demand for treasuries and sovereign bonds is going to continue indefinitely, and that certainly doesn't look to be the case over the long term. I think probably a much better investment is to go after higher yielding equities, and we've spent a long time a lot of time over the last couple of weeks talking about some of the companies that are leveraged to growth in the global economy rather than domestic growth in the USA or in Europe or in the UK, and that yield. There are that offer a competitive yield in a reasonably strong or relevant currency, and there are no shortage of those types of companies. The big divergence that we've had, particularly in stock markets over the last, particularly since the majority of emerging markets bottomed in October and November of 2008, is that we have a two-tier growth situation in the global economy, and we continue to see that the population centers of the world with the best GDP growth are doing considerably better than the pretty meager recovery that we've seen so far in the USA and in much of the periphery of Europe. Export-led economies in Northern Europe that are leveraged to that growth in the global economy are doing substantially better. And that doesn't appear to be a trend that's going to change very much, because the fiscal consolidation that is needed to get the economics of the Eurozone and the USA back under control is a medium to longer term type of solution. Whereas in Asia and in much of Latin America, you have massive economic expansion, you have a demographic dividend that's coming online in a number of countries right now, but over the next 20 years, you're going to have millions of new people entering the global economy. With that said, in the short term at least, some of the very best performers, particularly in the ASEAN region or Colombia or Chile in Latin America, are overextended relative to their moving averages. They have had a phenomenal performance recently, and there is, to a certain extent, it's because they've been the only game in town in terms of stock market performance, and they have also had these phenomenal momentum runs. If we do see other stock markets beginning to pick up, they could provide a certain amount of competition, and we could see some of the interest seep out of the Asian region or the Latin American region and back into some other markets. But over the medium term, this outperformance in terms of stock market performance for the population centers of the world, particularly right now in the Indian region and in Asian or ASEAN, is it looks like to be a medium to longer term theme. The Chinese market has been underperforming for the last year. It was one of the fastest to rally off its lows due to its stimulus package, and it lost momentum and pulled back rather sharply from August of last year. It does appear to be finding support, but there is the world of difference between the consumer-led shares in China versus those that are leveraged to the domestic economies of the USA and Europe. That latter group is by far the largest market cap weighting of the Chinese market, which accounts for the underperformance of that market over the last year. But consumer-led sectors in China, such as healthcare, such as autos or consumer discretionaries, consumer staples, have been doing phenomenally well, and they've been performing in line with the same sectors in Indonesia and in India, in Malaysia, and we've also seen that other performers have been in Thailand and the Philippines. And it's the growth of the middle class across these regions which is helping to fuel that growth. That's a secular theme, and it is probably a little bit overbought right now, but it will be best bought following reactions. So rather than looking at something like Wall Street, which remains in a secular bear market, which we would define as a period, a generational-long period of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And we've certainly seen the rising dividend yields recently, but the S&P has basically gone nowhere for 10 years in US dollar terms. I continue to believe that's in a cyclical bull market, but it's been in a first step above the base for much of the last year, and it's currently mid-range. It's definitely more difficult to make money in a volatile, ranging environment than in something that is trending consistently and finding support at its progression of higher reaction lows or finding support at a 200-day moving average. So that divergence that we have between those markets that were most affected by the credit crisis and those that were least affected by the credit crisis and most leveraged to growth in the global economy isn't something that's about to go away. We'll have short-term underperformance and outperformance between the two different groups, but over a medium to longer term perspective, one would expect that higher growth, improving standard of governance, stronger currency, less government debt, stronger balance sheet, surplus economy group will rally more on when they move to the upside and pull back less in percentage terms relative to their overall performance. And we've just had a very good move for those markets, so they're probably ripe for a pullback over a pullback and consolidation of gains over the coming weeks and months. And that will provide a buying opportunity. The massive growth that we have in those economies is helping to fuel bull markets, not just in their domestic demand stories. And of course, those domestic demand stories have their counterparts in right across that Asian and Latin American region. But there are plenty of companies in Europe and in the US and in the UK which are leveraged to growth in those economies, and that's where the outperformance is likely to be found, not just in the short term, but over a prolonged period of time. The commodity markets have been relatively unaffected by the selling pressure that we've had over the last month in particular. Particularly those industrial metals, even the ones that have been weakest, have pulled back to areas of potential support and remain within medium-term uptrends. And the best performing of the industrial metals have been towers of strength and had pulled back in really only a moderate fashion. The agricultural sector, helped at least in part by flooding in Pakistan and in China, and by hot weather in Europe and I think dry weather in the USA and wet weather in Latin America, has been an outperformer over the last few months. But we're looking at global expansion being led by the population centers of the world, where rising living standards are fueling demand for everything that we take for granted in this part of the world. And the relative strength of the commodity sector, probably excluding oil, because it had pulled back so sharply in line with stock markets, is an indication that we're not about to head into a global recession. The worst, I think, that could be expected is that the USA moves back into recession, but probably only very briefly. And that's a worst case scenario. Some of the worst case scenarios that have been outlined in reports that I've seen over the last couple of weeks are looking at the S&P going back to 500. And personally, I think that really is pie in the sky. I don't see that happening at all. And in the absence of some sort of doomsday rock taking out Manhattan or Washington, D.C., I think that that really is an extraordinarily bearish type of forecast. What we see in the commodity sector is that inflationary pressures are certainly beginning to rise. And we have governments that are adding stimulus and employing quantitative easing in order to protect their economies from a slowdown in economic growth, particularly there in the West. That really does look like a recipe for stagflation rather than anything else. And with oil now also beginning to pick up, having found support at the progression of higher reaction lows in the region of the $70 area, then that further increases the potential that a stagflationary environment is really quite a realistic possibility over the next 6 months to 18 months. And just where that leaves the quantitative easing programs outlined by various central banks will be a very interesting place to look at, because that speech by Ben Bernanke in here today didn't mention anything about potential inflationary pressures coming from the commodity sector, particularly in food and in industrial metals and potentially even energy. So that is something that isn't being considered at all at the moment, I suspect. The other major standout has been that a large number of emerging market currencies have held up remarkably well over this period of anxiety regarding financial markets generally in the USA and in Europe. The bulk of commentary that we get tends to be very US-centric or European-centric, but there's a whole big world out there that is doing very well indeed without being overly impacted by those markets at all. And their currencies are very much reflective of that economic growth. So While the US dollar has certainly strengthened over the last few months, particularly against the euro, it hasn't strengthened to any great extent against, for example, the Indonesian rupee or to the Singapore dollar or the Chilean peso or the Colombian peso. So there are plenty of currencies out there that continue to support the performance of their stock markets and are appreciating and holding their gains really quite impressively. Now, we've said on a number of occasions that no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And right now, the ones that need a weaker currency more than others are the US, the Eurozone, and Japan. And of all those, probably Japan more than just about anybody. And today was also important in with the Prime Minister saying that they're getting ready to take significant action if they see it needed. I think the CEO of Suzuki said that it was keeping him up at night, the strength of the yen. And the yen had a weak day in here today. Now, the progression of lower rally highs against or the US dollar's progression of lower rally highs against the yen remains in place. And that really would need to be taken out to indicate that there is a major trend change going on with the strength of the yen. But it is remarkably overextended. It's at a 15-year high against the US dollar. And so at least a pause in this area wouldn't be at all surprising. And an outright reversal, I think, is probably more likely than not at these levels. And with key reversals and upward dynamics right across Japanese markets, the market has been depressed and probably written off by a large number of people, but the TOPIX is trading at a book value of one. And that's cheap for a market that is packed with companies that probably, I don't think it's an overestimation to say that they dominate some of their niches, particularly in the electronics and indeed the auto sector. So Japan has had a remarkably bad run of governance, both in civil and economic. But they appear to be getting their act together with this strength of the yen, and that is a positive over the medium term. There's certainly the stock markets in particular are certainly overextended to the downside and ripe for at least a relief rally towards the moving average, if not more than that. And I think with that, I'll leave you with a comment on the precious metals, because with the incredible amount of supply that is coming into the sovereign markets and the debauchement of the currencies via this quantitative easing, investors are increasingly looking for a secure store of value. And for those that are looking not just for security, but also for something that's going to hold its value, then gold really is the only possible medium that offers all of those various attributes. Gold isn't cheap today. Gold was cheap 10 years ago when Gordon Brown sold the UK's gold. It's not cheap today, but nor is it particularly overvalued. It probably does need some form of catalyst to move it into an accelerating stage that would be characteristic of the final stages of a bull market. But it remains very much in form. It found support in the region of its 200-day moving average relatively recently. It's pushing back up towards the highs, and it's coming into a favorable time of year. So those are all good positive things. The rhythm of gold has been that it sustained up breaks out of relatively lengthy sort of 18-month ranges in 2005, 2007, and 2009. If it were to do the same thing in 2010, that would be a marked pickup in the pace of what has been a very rhythmic advance over the last decade. That would be an indication that we're entering the third psychological perception stage, which builds up to an eventual euphoria in the market. We certainly don't have gold fever in here today. But it's a possibility over a period of time. And it certainly merits investor interest. Because we've had gold pushing up over the last few weeks, and it's in the region of its highs, it's beginning to have an effect on gold shares. There's a number of those tier two gold shares which are outperforming the gold price, such as Eldorado or Rand Gold. The larger cap shares have been a bit slow to get out of the blocks and have been consolidating for much of the last 18 months. But they also showed signs of life in here this week, and silver back above the $19 level is also really quite interesting. So we are starting to see things falling into place for the precious metals market. And with the pullback in US Treasuries in here today and the weakness of the dollar and the yen in tandem with that move, gold actually finished up on the day. So it didn't benefit particularly from the massive move that we saw in treasuries, and it doesn't appear to be particularly affected by the subsequent pullback that may be beginning in these sovereign bonds. So gold could well do the could well reassert its uptrend by breaking upwards to new high ground in the next few months if it holds the majority of its recent gain and particularly holds above its 200-day moving average. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish all the best to all of you.